jackass shit. Somebody rolled down the paper. Jesus Christ, get the pinata out of the spider.
Okay, I need 7 fish to the scale on the right. Lower the Hinoxus grip and let's use Occam's razor to open up the Occam's razor drawer where we can get Occam's razor so we can figure out what the right thing to say is on the podcast. Gary, bring in the window cleaners. Open up your third eyes and on the count of 1, 2, 3, let me get some symbiotic fluid and somebody lower the amniotic gas blaster into my buck bug machine. It's opening time for the DTFH, everybody. Let's roll it down. Pull the train cord, open up the tracks, get your mouth dental floss, definitely use nitrous oxide whenever you can. It's time for the Doug and Trussell Family Hour Podcast! Closely, then you might hear the heartbeat of a thing that lives inside your mind called your identity. It wants so much to be a thing, even though it knows it's not, that it makes a toilet of your brain, shits out all your thoughts. Creates a trap made out of where you wish you were and where you hope you're not. Whenever you are suffering, it's in this trap you're caught.
Oh, money, money, 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 oh.
I was very disappointed by the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast. I don't think it's fair to call this a comedy podcast, and I'm not sure he's a comedian. He should stay in his lane, or he should be lame. This is not funny at all.
Never getting that time back. How are you, man? How are you, man?
If you're thinking about getting your hair cut, why not head over to the New California Barbershop? Use offer code LADYDIANA and nothing will happen. In fact, Brian won't even know what you're talking about. That's the New California Barbershop on Sunset Boulevard. Offer code LADYDIANA. This advertisement was not endorsed by the New California Barbershop on Sunset Boulevard in Echo Park. In fact, Brian doesn't even know I'm doing it. Praise the 7 moons of Poseidon. We have a glorious podcast for you today. With us is a guru, a priest, a pope, a reverend, a saint, an enlightened being, and most importantly, the founder of the Church of What's Happening Now. Joey Diaz, aka Mad Flavor, is here with us today. We're going to dive right into that, but first, some quick business. A deep thank you to Robinhood for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Robinhood, it's an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, options, cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. It's a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood, it's very easy. You just sign up, you connect it to whatever it is that you want to use to fund your investments, and then from there, you could take advantage of the values of the Robinhood app. They have no commission fees. It's very easy to use, and they've got really cool elements such as collections that have things like the 100 most popular stocks, sectors like entertainment and social media, and curated categories like female CEOs, as well as analyst ratings of buy slash hold slash sell for every stock. So you could do all the research that formerly people had to spend a lot of money, and they had to use lots of different avenues to gather this stuff together. Watch Wall Street and see the insane craziness of the archaic technology meeting investment versus what Robinhood gives you. You can discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and learn how to invest by doing it. And you don't have to worry about the risk of there being some kind of brokerage charge or commission fee. Right now, if you go to duncan.robinhood.com. That's duncan.robinhood.com, and sign up. You will get a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. That's right, friends. You're going to get a free stock. Just head over to duncan.robinhood.com. That's duncan.robinhood.com. It is time for you to take a deep sip of the bubbling nectar, which is the DTFH over at patreon.com. Head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe, and you will have access to additional DTFH related stuff, including an extra hour-long rambling thing that I do once a month, sometimes more. I'm trying to do that more, actually. And just stuff that maybe I just feel a little too like squeamish or nervous or cowardly to place on the main feed. Some music, for example, and also a link to our Discord server, which is a place where you can go and hang out with other people who listen to the show. And maybe some people who don't listen to the show. I don't know. But also, you will get commercial-free episodes that come out sooner than they do on the main feed. And also, you will be supporting the thriving megastructure, which in this dimension is known as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. That's patreon.com/DTFH. Also, Christmas is coming, and the best way to embody the spirit of that holiday is to buy stuff and give it to your friends to show them that you love them, because truly that's the only way to express love. And the best way to express love is by going to the shop located at duncantrussell.com. We've got a lot of new stuff. In fact, it's all new. Hoodies, shirts, t-shirts. I know there was a drought for the longest time at the store. I know there was just an infinite supply of the same stuff. I don't expect you to trust me and go back to the website and look at the shop, but go look at the shop. It's all new stuff. Head over to duncantrussell.com and click on the shop to see for yourself. Get some wonderful, blessed temple garb for you to wear around your octagon or tetrahedron or geodesic dome. If you're going to be around Los Angeles on November 16th, come to the Samarasa Center, where I'm going to be doing basically a podcast, even though technically that's not what it is, but the other words for it are pretty boring, even more boring than podcast. Dialogue, having a conversation, sitting down with David Nickturn, who's my meditation teacher, and who was a student of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, and who teaches meditation classes all over the world. He's also an Emmy Award-winning composer. He's been on the podcast, I think, a couple of times now, and is potentially deeply cheesy as this is going to sound, I'm really enjoying having formal meditation instruction and an actual meditation teacher. So if you want to come listen to us yap and have a conversation about the topic of spiritual materialism, then head over to samarasacenter.com and look for David Nickturn. It's coming up on November 16th. Today's guest is an unduplicatable manifestation of completely undomesticated comedy, a kind of vortex, a walking cyclone of not just present moment style awareness, but brilliant, original, unique, iconic. Joey has had one of the craziest lives that I have ever heard of. He is someone who has spent time in prison for kidnapping. And though that is incredibly interesting to me, what is especially magnetizing about Joey Diaz is not so much his sordid past, but his beautiful present and the fact that he has transformed a lifetime of chaos, not just into undomesticated comedy, but also into a philosophy that he lives by. Well, you've strapped over your third eye and send a beam of rainbow light shooting through the time-space continuum to rain down upon today's guest, Joey Diaz.
Welcome, welcome all you that you are with us. Shake Trussell Basement.
You got an hour?
Yeah.
Joey, thank you so much, man. It's so great to see you.
No, it's great to see you, brother.
Hanging out with you is so... I'm lucky.
No, I'm lucky. You're my brother. What friend? Brothers.
Because you're like... I don't mean to like flatter you too much at the beginning of a podcast and put you in an odd position, but like, you are the comedian and philosopher. You're like the quintessential thing. Like, you're it, which is that comedians are like not just funny. Like, underneath that is like real... real philosophy. Like,
fuel. There has to be a little fuel.
Yeah.
And it's fuel from the years that you've gained. You know, when somebody comes up to you now and they tell you what they want to do in comedy.
Yeah.
You don't want to ever be judgmental and shit on somebody's dreams. But right. You've been through where right. They've been through. And you want to tell them you have a fucking horrible idea. But what type of person would that make you?
Right.
No idea that comes from us is bad. It's how we perceive it that's bad. But we usually have pretty good ideas as comics. I watched Roseanne Barr on Larry King one night. Just getting back from a gig and Roseanne was on. And he asked her a question. He said, why did you throw the ABC staff out of the Christmas party? Why did you do all these things? And she goes, you got to remember, I'm a stand-up comic. I'm a writer, I'm a producer, and I'm the director, and I know what works. And ABC's goal was to knock Cosby down from being number one at the time.
Ah.
And we did it. And after I had that formula, I didn't need them anymore. I proved to myself. So as a comic, we've lived two lives. We live our personal lives, and then you live the struggle that you get involved with that. Every 90 days, you got to ask yourself, why the fuck am I doing this?
Yeah, maybe more.
Now, the other day we were talking about being an atheist and not believing and whatever.
Yeah.
I would love to look you in the face as a smart individual and say that once a person dies, he dies, and there's no heaven, there's no hell, there's no religion. I would love to tell you that, but I can't because I've experienced it. When you experienced signs, you say to yourself, okay, there may not be a god. I don't know if he's Chinese. I don't know if he's Buddha. I don't know if it's a chick with eight heads. But there's something out there that keeps you alive.
Yeah.
Every couple of months, that you're such a fucking asshole and you're so proud that you're too scared to reveal it. But that's what's been keeping us alive. It's something, a sign, every 90 days that happens. And it's not a raise at your job. It's not your wife sucking your dick the best she's ever done. It's not you fucking a coworker up the ass. It's this moment where you go to do something and you go, wow, what just happened?
Right.
You know, and that's where the philosophy comes in, understanding all those things at once, not to.
You know that, there's a name for that. Actually, weird, I wrote it down here. Rojit. Is a name for it in Buddhism. It means the one taste. And so it's the idea that underneath everything or in everything is this one taste. And it's good. Essentially, everything's fundamentally good. And that thing, the sign you're talking about, one way to put it would be it's when you get that, you taste it again. Maybe you just taste it for a second. Something happens, some weird intersection, a synchronicity, a kind of weird miracle. Or maybe it's you don't even know what it is. It's just like a feeling all of a sudden, but it's not a feeling. It's deeper than that. And then once you got that, you're set. Everything can come from that. Everything can come from that. But if you don't have that, or if you've forgotten it, and you don't quite believe it's there, you maybe have read about it, but you're looking into the world for it, or so, you know, or even worse, you're trying to rearrange the world to make that taste happen. You go crazy. You go insane. That's the problem. People are crazy, for lack of a better word.
Well, when you don't see that sign, it's because you haven't put the efforts in, and that's what kills people. That's the biggest frustration, because I was involved in that when I wanted. But I didn't do anything to show the universe that I wanted. You have to show the universe and you have to show yourself. It's really weird. February 19, 1985 is my birthday. It's my 22nd birthday. And I was a pretty popular kid and whatever. But at this time, I had become a criminal. And I was trying to get my life together. I wasn't doing blow. And I'll never forget being in a Chinese restaurant, one of my favorite Chinese restaurants, the Enchanted Lily.
Yes.
In Fort Lee, New Jersey. Having Szechuan beef with white rice on an egg roll.
Yeah.
I'm saying to myself, look at me. I've created such a hole in my life that here I am eating dinner alone on my birthday.
Ah, right.
And I remember I started to feel sorry for myself. And this is, and at this time I was a Catholic. And at this time I was involved with Santeria. But at this time in my life, I was disenchanted with everything. That's why I had become a criminal, because I didn't have, how can God take your mother away?
Right.
There's no God. That's bullshit. There's no way God takes your mother away.
Right.
But now, 30 years later, I feel completely different. There was a reason, because it turned me into who I am today. When I was 27, 28, 29, I had already been locked up. I get out of this prison cell, and I knock this girl up. I'm not out of the prison cell 2 weeks, and I fuck her in the woods, and I knocked her up, you know, and I forget what the point I was getting to, that
you're talking.
I got all this stuff thrown at me, and I was really confused, and I was 28 years old, and I had this confusion, and I didn't know what to do. So the first thing I turned to was the Catholic Church, and I went and I got confirmed, because I got thrown out of Catholic school before I could get my confirmation. And confirmation is the sacrament of the Holy Spirit. So I knew something. My spirit wasn't settled. Just to give people and yourself some background.
Is confirmation a ritual? What is it?
Confirmation is one of the seven sacraments. So there's baptism, Holy Communion, anointing of the sick, you know, your death, marriage.
Okay.
Confirmation. Those are all the seven sacraments.
Gotcha.
But I was lost, and I had a friend, Lenny, who his friend had HIV and was running a restaurant, a vegan pseudo-restaurant, 1980. We're going back to 90 now. And it was at a place called Naropa Institute.
So okay.
In Boulder, Colorado. So
yeah.
For me to see Lenny, I would have to, the reason why I went to see Lenny was because I got a free meal. I was a starving comic, and I would go into Lenny, and he'd mix up some vegan stuff for me. But I started taking pamphlets on the way out, and I went to see Ginsberg.
Yeah.
Talk, and I went to see a couple of Tibetan monks talk.
You went to see probably, did you go see Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche?
I love to tell you names.
Was he wearing glasses?
They all had glasses.
Did he wear a suit?
They were all intellectuals. No, they had the typical monk attire on. But I listened to them in my mind, and I took a course. I took a course on walking meditation there, Monday nights at 6 o'clock. And we wouldn't do it there. We'd go to a place in Chautauqua Park, and everybody had stinky feet, and, you know, it was like fucking a stink bomb of a festival.
Yeah.
But I went through it, and that's where I learned. That was the first time I learned about karma, because I added up what I made from when I robbed that guy, and I added up what the attorney bills were, and I had made a $500 profit. So for 2 years, my life was worth $500. That means I went to prison for $500.
Yeah.
For $250 a year. I was already very karma-ly aware. That made me, how they say today, woke. I always believed in karma after that.
Yeah.
And I always knew that what I put in, I would get out, and that's why I'm here sitting across from you today. I'm Catholic, and I have Santeria roots and everything, but there's a lot of Buddhism things in my...
Oh, that's great.
...in my life. I don't know quotes like you, and I haven't read a lot about it, but in my daily routine, You know, my daily routine is to make somebody's day, to call somebody out of the blue and throw them off. You never know what they're going through.
You do, you know? Do that, man. And you that means to, a lot.
You have to. You have to. You know, people make fun of me on Facebook and they always go, you always say the same stupid shit. When you wake up in the morning and your 2 feet hit the floor, if you don't say it's a beautiful day to be alive, and the first person you see, you say good morning to, regardless of your mood, that will change your the way you think for the day.
Yeah.
That stupid, those stupid words in the beginning, it's a beautiful day to be alive. That is a comic. As we're walking to pee, we'll add a joke in there, and as we're peeing, we're giggling. It's a beautiful day to be alive. Not for Roseanne, that dumb fuck. You know, we'll always say ourselves, and that's why I put that down, because I want you to say that to yourself every morning when your feet hit the ground.
Yeah.
Even if you're homeless, it's a beautiful day to be a fucking alive. It's raining, the blizzard's coming, I got a half a veggie and cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
But life, it's a beautiful day to be alive. Whenever I play with my kids in the afternoon, and I'm sitting there, like I'm sitting at martial arts. This is going to happen to you. One day you're going to be at a martial arts class. It's Wednesday at 4 o'clock. Your daughter's doing everything bad.
Yeah.
But she's smiling and she's running around with six other kids. And for some reason you look at your phone at 4:30 and you go, I got another hour, half hour of this torture. That's what you say to yourself.
Yeah.
And then you think of somebody like Ralphie May or a lot of Freddie Soto.
Sure.
A lot of our friends that died that left kids. And you say to yourself, I wonder what they would give right now just to be at this fucking football game or this stupid rehearsal or this, because it's never stupid. That time you're spending with people is quality. You and I were talking about contact on the way here. That yes. You and I, if we didn't have wives, we could, with Grubhub,
yeah,
and Reefer,
Instacart,
we could stay in this house for days, yeah, if you let us at a time.
Why leave? It's nice.
And then that's when depression sets in. That's when all those bad things come in, because four walls do creep up on a motherfucker.
They sure do.
And there's two types of four walls. There's the four walls in your house, and there's the four walls in your mind.
Yeah.
So you always have to be aware of eight walls at all times. This year I went through a big four wall thing. You know, I was telling you on the way here that I sold the show. It's about my family and whatever, but it's about a guy that can't believe he's where he's at, which is where I am every day. Like, after this podcast, you and I will goof around, we'll smoke a joint,
yeah,
we'll giggle. I think you set up the corner. There's a place that I could buy balls to put in women's mouths and capes and rings on
that's
their nipples.
Right.
And you could pull them. We'll giggle about that. But the reality is an hour from now, I'm at a dinner table saying prayers with a 5-year-old girl. Do you know how creepy that is? Do you have no idea how creeped up that is? That in an hour, no matter what we talk about, MGH, MDHD.
Yeah.
We saw fucking the devil, that in an hour I'm going to be with a little girl who's explaining her day to me and wants my attention.
Yes.
She doesn't want money. She doesn't want a bicycle. She doesn't want to meet fucking anybody. She just looks at you. You're her world. You're what she believes.
A lot of responsibility, man.
They just want to sit with you in color. That's it. You know, every night before I go do comedy, I got to color for a half hour, 45 minutes. And she goes off the reservation, and she wants to do it with sticks. But I look at the big picture. Time. I'm spending time with her. Time is of the essence.
Yeah.
Before I leave, I listen, Duncan, let's be honest here. I told you that when you become a parent, don't read the books. Just look at your mother. Look at your father. Make an easy assessment of where they did well and where they did bad, because they weren't perfect, our parents.
Oh, I know.
They weren't perfect.
Sure.
So I want you to do an Abe Lincoln close and work on the gaps. Abe Lincoln close is where you take a piece of paper and you put a line through the middle and you put the benefits and the cons.
Oh, sure.
Duncan Trussell just offered me a job making $60,000 a year. The benefits are I get to work with Duncan. I get to learn from Duncan. I get to make $60,000 a year. I got to drive from Woodland Hills every day.
Yeah.
Duncan doesn't work Mondays.
Yeah.
You know, there's always, and then you have to make an assessment of what works for you. And that's what I did. I took a look at my mom. I took a look at my stepdad. I put them together and I saw the holes in their game.
Yeah.
And my game has to be stronger there to fill those gaps.
See, that thing right there, man, if you look at the world in a non-selfish way, which is what you're doing, you're a non-selfish person. You've figured it out. And not only are you a non-selfish person, the way you are, you can't bullshit. You've had some contact with reality, and now because of that, being around you is like being around reality and not bullshit. You can't just get that either.
No.
You have to like work for that. You don't just get to be like that. You have to work for that.
Well, you and I were talking about Judge Kavanaugh on The Drive.
Yeah.
And we were talking about my disagreement with the whole thing, because you cannot judge a person. As an American, as a human being, I cannot judge Duncan for what he did in 1982. I'm going to tell you why. I've gotten to this point in my life because I had three worlds. I had a world where God took my mother from me, so I lashed out at the world. How did I lash out? By robbing people, by being a shitty person, by doing shitty things. If I saw a homeless guy, I'd light him on fire. I'd shoot a dog. When you see that happening in your neighborhood, somebody shoots a cat. I wasn't doing that. I was going at the world. I was angry at the world.
Yeah.
And I had that part of my life for about 10 years. But then I got pissed at the world for something else. Okay. So the world, I'm angry at the world. I'm lashing out at the world. But I'll tell you what, world, I'm going to give you a break. I'm going to give you what's coming to me. I want you to give me what's coming to me.
Yeah.
Because the world took my mother, now you owe me something. Oh, is that the West worst attitude to have?
Yeah.
I'd rather still lash out at people. I was doing a lot better. When you're lashing out against the world, you're doing a lot better because at least you're getting that shit out.
Oh, shit.
Now when you go into the mind phase that the world owes you something. Well, God took my father at 6, so the world owes me a fucking favor.
Yeah.
That's the worst reality to conquer. When you really think that the world owes you something because your father was Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Or because your father was a state senator. When you think the world owes you something, boy, is that a cold reality.
Yeah.
That reality landed me to sleep in a rocket ship at a park.
That's right. Yeah, sure, of course.
The reality of the world owing you something. Like, what are you talking about? Like, it's like if I come here to live with you, and you give me that nice bed over there, and you go, Joey, that's yours. Tomorrow, my wife will give you a ride down to whatever, and you could go looking for a job. What job are you talking about? I'm staying here with you. Mm. You know, 11 years ago, you crashed at my apartment for 3 days while you got an apartment for comedy. Now I'm going to do the same, but this time we're friends. I'm going to stay here for a month or two. You're doing great. You got money. You could throw me a couple dollars from time to time. Not to mention, what's for breakfast every morning? It's when the world, when I came
out. Joey, the funny thing is, if you literally did that, it would make my month. So it's funny. I know I don't mean to mess up your example, but I'll make you breakfast.
It's so weird how in 84 I came out here and I have an uncle who lives in Glendale.
Yes.
And we did not talk for 25 years because I came out here demanding shit.
Right.
Like I came out here going, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean you put me upstairs from the bar? No, you're not. You're going to lend me $1,500. You're going to get me an apartment. They're going to lend me another $1,500 to put down in a car. And I'm going to get a job and I'll finance you. I'll pay you back after you co-sign the loan.
Right.
I don't know if we got the look on his face like, are you retarded? He's like, I'll do everything for you in the world except pay for your luxuries. I will not give you money for marijuana. I will not give you money for alcohol. And I will not give you money to go to a movie. But I will feed you, and I will take care of your rent while you get your life together. I was insulted, Duncan. Like, sure. I'm like, I'm flabbergasted.
How dare you?
How dare you? And then I got some lumps, and I ended up going to prison. And once I got out of prison, I realized the world don't owe you dick. Mm. I seen people in prison that would say to me, doesn't really matter, because when I get out, I'm going to go on disability anyway. They had a whole division in prison of selling you on the thought of you're disabled. You're never going to be able to get a job.
Right.
So why don't we do the paperwork now so we get the process starting? You have a kid, Duncan? Yeah, I do. Well, where do you live? I live in fucking Hollywood. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to get you $8.91 a month. And for the rest of your life, you get a check for $8.91 a month.
Right.
And these guys accept it. They accept the disability. They like, you're right. And they end up in jail because you can't live on $8.91 a month.
Right.
But you're selling your soul for that $8.91 a month because now because you went to prison, the world owes you something.
That's right.
Right then is when I go, no, I'm not disabled. I don't want to sign into none of your fucking stupid programs. And in fact, for years, I never put down I had a felony on applications. They would come back to me a week later and go, we got to ask you a question. Is there kidnapping on there, Jose? And I go, Jose Diaz? You know how many Jose Diaz's there are? You know, you're not going to get me on this. And I would lie myself through it or whatever. But
sure.
Those are the three positions of your mind. My mind now when I wake up is, it's a beautiful day of being alive. And it's my responsibility to make it even better.
This is the third world.
This is the third world.
Yeah.
And this world has been around for about 11 years.
Gotcha.
This world of
balance.
I have to wake up. It's a beautiful day to be alive, but I still got to justify my existence.
Yeah.
I still have to go back to, and this is it. This is it.
Well, you know, the thing, there's two things that you made me think of. But one of them is that when you're telling me don't read any books, just look at the truth. And from that, you will derive how to be a great parent. Similarly, in Buddhism, what I love so much about it, at least the what I'm being taught, even though there's a lot of great books on Buddhism, and they're fascinating, and the story of it's incredible.
Incredible.
But it's not about books. It's about an experience. And the experience is contact with reality, and a process to contact reality. And the process to contact reality is called Gom in Tibet, which means self-knowing. That's what meditation is. It means self-knowing. So people automatically have this idea, oh, meditation is this or that. Meditation is to know the self. And in Buddhism, what everything is, what everyone is, what the world actually is fundamentally good. And this fundamental goodness gets covered up or kind of like confused by transitory phenomena, as it's called. So still this fundamental goodness, all there's all shit flying around, right? And so in that place, people start getting into the different modes you're talking about, which is like somebody's like, oh, man, I'm a victim. This world fucking sucks. This world fucking sucks because shit never goes my way. But those kinds of people are the people who win the lottery and fucking die, kill their family. They get what they want, and their life still fucking sucks. It didn't work. Right? That's why everyone's like, whoa, that's like a real thing. Winning the lottery can ruin a person's life. But if their mind is in any of those first two worlds you're talking about. Because those first two worlds are based on ignorance. And the ignorance is that you don't know who you are. You're ignorant of your true self. You haven't looked at what your parents were like. You haven't looked at your past. You haven't looked deeply into yourself at all. And this isn't a thing you just do once either. Every morning you do it. Every morning you do it. Every morning you try to make contact with that fundamental ground that isn't based on circumstance. Because if you're basing your life on whether shit's going right for you or not, or whether the weather is good today, that fucking thing where you look at the weather and you're like, oh, it's raining. I'm not going to go out today. If you're like making your life based on any of that shit, then you have lost what you are. And now you're fucked. And that leads to suffering. That leads to deep, endless, infinite suffering. And also it leads to karma. Because in that place, you're going to start making decisions that are based on ignorance. And now you're going to start doing either selfish shit, or you can go down the other side of the road. It's just imbalance. You're either going to be like trying to hurt the world, or you're going to be acting like, God, the world has destroyed me and I deserve this or that. And it's all just based on this one problem, which is you're not going to make yourself happy if you think you can rearrange shit around you in a certain way. And then there's going to be happiness. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's like having poison ivy on your leg and scratching your fucking head. It's never going to work. Or another way to put it would be, it's like just scratching poison ivy and it's spreading all over your body. And so the itch is so bad that you, instead of scratching, getting to the root of the problem, was that you keep getting around fucking poison ivy. You keep falling into the same trap over and over again. You pretend that somewhere down the line you can make this itch stop happening through external means. That's what I love about what I'm being taught. And I probably, you know, the school that you were in is actually, weirdly, when you mentioned Naropa, it's very funny to me and it gives me goosebumps, kind of. Because my meditation teacher is a student of this Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who is in this lineage of Buddhism called the Kagyu lineage, and Naropa is in within that. So it's really funny to me that you would just bring that up.
I learned a lot going there. And I can't lie to you and tell you, I was young, I was selfish, I was out of prison, I wanted to get into comedy, and I was still a little judgmental. And there was a lot of people there that weren't my type of people.
Sure.
But when I'd have a conversation with them, they would always have something enlightening to say to my journey, you know, about the journey I was in without even knowing me.
The enlightening saying stuff is great. But what I like about you is you don't need to say anything. I can sit around with you, and I like what you said to me, which is like, yeah, you can like, maybe I can say shit about Buddhism. Oh, it's called Nitya Nizanda or some shit, right? Which is fine. I mean, it's nice to have that. I like it. It kind of helps me a little bit. But who gives a fuck? That's knowledge. Who gives a fuck about knowledge? What we want is wisdom. Wisdom, not knowledge. Knowledge is fine. But you can meet the fucking angriest person on earth or the most selfish person on earth. And they can spout. They can memorize scripture. They can fucking like go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. But they don't have this thing, which is this calm, a balance, a harmony is a way to put it, a kind of harmonious quality to them. This is not to say that you don't get pissed sometimes and blow your fucking stack. You know, I'm not saying that all the time.
But I look at it a lot different now. You know, you're speaking about hitting the lottery. That's no different than what's going on in our world right now.
Right.
We were all young comics. We were friends with Joe Rogan. We were friends with him. We really cared about him and were sincere friends.
That's right.
You stayed with him for a while. He got mad at you when you got married the first time.
Yep.
He got mad at me over drugs.
Married.
You know, he got pissed at Ari for a while. But we've always had this little family. Now the family stepped up.
Yeah.
And now we're all put in different positions. It's hitting the lottery in my world. We've all hit the lottery.
Yeah.
But we've hit the lottery in three ways. We've hit the lottery successful. We've started to help other people. And we've also hit the lottery by spreading what we've known through podcasts. It's really weird, like, what, to get behind the microphone and talk every week about our experiences. And for people to go, we just thought comics got their dick sucked.
That's
and
it.
Did drugs. We, you know, I read, ladies and gentlemen, Lenny Bruce, and I was sold. Like, I was sold. I wanted to hang out with strippers. I wanted to do heroin. And I wanted to sleep all day at the Chelsea Hotel in Manhattan. That was it. I was pretty good with that. Breaking even, having enough to pay the rent.
Sure.
Eat a little bit. I don't need to go on vacation. I don't need a fancy car. And it's so weird now. You pull up to the back of the Comedy Store, and there's $1 million worth of cars on any given night.
Yeah.
$1 million worth of cars. And I still drive my little Subaru that I pay $268 a month for. I lease it for 3 years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, staying grounded where we're at has been very important to me. Staying grounded right now is the hardest thing I do. It's not comedy. It's not parenting. Because when we perform and we walk off stage, there's an adoration. We could buy that adoration.
Yeah.
Or we could take that adoration with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I learned to take that adoration with a grain of salt from working with Rogan. When I was a feature actor,
yeah.
I'd pull over. They'd pull me over and go, "You are way better than him. He's horrible." And then 10 minutes later, I'd see them on Rogan getting a picture taken, signing an autograph. And I'd assume that these are the same people that came back 3 weeks later and then watched Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot of feature acts that lost it. I can't name how many feature acts I've worked with that I come back and go, "Hey, come here. This weekend I worked with such and such, and half the audience told me I was way better than him." And they can't recover from that. They don't understand the nature of people.
Right. Oh, that shit.
They don't understand.
I know what you mean. When people get puffed up.
Yeah, when people get puffed up.
Well,
our toughest job right now as comedians is the ego.
Yeah.
Like, I have let my ego completely go. I don't care about Netflix specials. I don't care about what number you're on the podcast. I don't care about anything. I'm back to my Buddhist ways. When you're a Buddhist, you don't need necessity. You don't strive to get a Corvette. You strive to feel like a Corvette.
God damn it, that's brilliant.
You don't strive to buy a Mercedes. You strive to turn your mind into a Mercedes Benz.
That's beautiful, man.
And that's what I'm doing right now, every day.
Yeah.
I don't want to get caught up in anything. You know, it fucks with me when Rogan goes on a podcast and he'll go, "That's the funniest guy in the world," and blah, 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 blah. It's a great compliment, and I know where he's coming from. But to me, when he says that, I force myself to thinking about the time I went to Carvel Ice Cream, and I looked down, and there was like a charity for these poor little black kids with flies. And it probably had like $18 in a can and some change.
Yeah.
And I just took the change jar and put it under my arm and walked out and bought a bag of reefer. So I always take a good memory and I mix it with a bad memory. So I never forget who the fuck I really am.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Fuck yeah.
Like, I never forget. Like, you just told me that after a podcast, a kid will pull me over and go, "You're listening to the podcast, changed my life," and they got tears in their eyes. And I understand it. When I was a kid, what kept me together was certain music. Certain music kept me together.
Sure.
I'm not saying I'm as great as those musicians or anything, but I'll hug that person while I'm hugging them. I'm like, "You poor bastard. If you knew that 10 years ago I was putting a fucking roofie in some chick's drink just to stick my finger up her ass and robbed her, you wouldn't be here hugging me," you know?
Yeah, they still would though.
So that's the contrast. So whenever somebody says something positive to me, I always think about something I did that was just awful.
Yeah.
Like, in a hilarious type of way.
Sure.
And I go, see what I'm saying? It all balanced out.
That's right.
So that good thing I did balanced out with that bad thing I did. Now I'm okay. I'm not going to leave here yelling at the valet driver.
Yeah.
Because my car wasn't there first.
That's right.
About things that don't matter in this life. I requested bottled water.
I know. Well, that's... Even that, you know...
Fuck you! Not chilled! Room temperature! You know, that'll never... Like,
because they haven't scratched the itch, man. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, you see all the different variants of this of what's just considered to be, like... There's a fundamental delusion that people have. Well, there's actually, like... You could say there's maybe three big problems. And one of them is aggression... And I think and they're all connected. They all play off of each other. So, like, the three big problems we have are aggression, desire, and aversion, right? So, basically, like, the problem is either people don't want to be where they are and they want something else, you know? And the two play on each other. So, a person, I want something. I think that if I get this thing, I'm going to feel better. If I get the Netflix special, I'm going to feel better. If I get on I'm going to feel better on the Tonight Show. If I sell out a Coliseum, I'm going to feel better. And so all these things lead to aggression because you want all this fucking shit because inside you've detected that you don't feel right. You feel insecure is the way it's described, or anxious, you know, and everybody feels anxious. That's Buddhism. One way to put, and again, when I say that's Buddhism, guys, I'm just learning this shit, so I could easily be fucking it up. Look into it yourself, please. I am just clearly not some Buddhist teacher. But the idea is that instead of getting into your fucking head that anxiety you've got inside of you, which is coming from a kind of groundlessness, you know, which is that really we don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. We don't know. A meteor has slammed into the earth and wiped out the fucking dinosaurs. That's not bullshit. It actually happened. A fucking mountain fell out of the sky into the earth and shifted the climate to completely kill almost everything on the fucking planet. That's what that's happens here. So there's a fundamental insecurity to everything. Also, Freddie Soto is a great example. Goes to bed, partying, doesn't wake up. That's how life is. Any given moment. You hear about this fucking dude, he was ordering fucking Carl's Jr. I think it was Carl's Jr. Leaned out the window, I don't know how he did it, put his car in reverse, slammed into a tree. I think he still had the fucking bag in his hand. Like he was reaching for the bag, slams the car into reverse. It's late night, dead, right? That's how the world really is. So we don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. So that can't be necessarily a very pleasant experience if you've attached yourself to the idea that you are a continuous self, that this thing that you're doing is going to keep going, right? And so because that's not a great feeling, and you can always tell, man, generally going along with what you're talking about, getting pissed about Perrier is also, if you bring up death around those people, they don't want to talk about it. Like my fucking dad died, right? And so I'll say to people, oh, my dad died, you know? And they either know about death or they don't. The people who know about death, they're like, oh, I'm sorry, or I'm sorry, or I'm sorry. But they won't do what can often happen, which is where people are just like, they get kind of like pale. And they're freaked, right? And they know they're going to die now. And they're thinking about, oh, man, I'm going to fucking die, man. Oh, Jesus Christ. And they might even try to get away from you because you're reminding them of something that's going to happen to all of us, which is not that big a fucking deal, man. But the problem is it's an itch. It's an insecure feeling. It's a feeling of like, I got to make myself feel better. I know how to do it. I'll get famous. I know how to do it. I'll get my dick sucked. I know how to do it. I'll shoot heroin. I know how to do it. And you've been trying that over and over. I'll go in my phone and look on Twitter, or I'll eat a big fuck, whatever. It doesn't work. The problem is it doesn't work. It just distracts you from the reality of your predicament. And this creates karma for you, right? That's Buddhism. And within that, you're either trying to get somewhere or you don't want to be where you're at. And generally, in some way, you're pissed off about it. And that's aggression. Even though it doesn't have to be pissed off about it, there's just this general sense sometimes when you get around people where you're like, maybe you're just like somewhere out to eat. And when they bring you the Perrier you ordered, they go, slam the cup down and walk off. Thanks a lot. Whatever, I don't care if that happens, but you can look at the person and realize, oh, okay, they're pissed. There's aggression in them, right? These are the three problems. It's like in the wheel of life in Buddhism, which has within it all the worlds you're kind of talking about. The hell realms, the realm of the jealous gods, as it's called, the realm of the gods, the human realm, the animal realm. In the center of that wheel, we have aversion, we have desire, and we've got fucking aggression. A quick word from our sponsors. It's time to get rid of your cursed, crappy router and head over to Eero.com. Eero is a Wi-Fi system. I have replaced my tarantula arachnid-looking hideous router with a new beautiful, gleaming, sleek Eero router. It connects to base stations that you can put throughout your house. If you've got dead spots or if your internet is slow somewhere in your house, then Eero could potentially speed your internet up. Also, they got an amazing app that goes along with it. And if you want to, you can sign up for Eero Plus, which is designed to provide simple, reliable security that defends all your home's devices against a growing number of threats such as malware, spyware, phishing attacks, as well as unsuitable content. The combination of Eero with Eero Plus provides complete protection for your network and all the devices and those who use them as they connect to the internet. It offers the ability to block unwanted content. It gives you advanced security, and it even has ad blocking. It also has some great third-party security apps, including VPN protection from EncryptMe and password management from 1Password, as well as antivirus software from Malwarebytes. I am currently using the 1Password that came with my Eero. It's fantastic. The single router model just doesn't work for our increasingly high bandwidth world. Imagine asking a light bulb in your living room to light your master bedroom. Of course, you'd be out of your mind if you did that, but it's kind of similar with Wi-Fi. What do you expect? Your poor router is trying to pump sweet Wi-Fi all over your house. It needs help. Get rid of that old thing and sign up for Eero. Right now, head over to Eero, that's Eero.com/Duncan, and use promo code Duncan. That's Eero, Eero.com/Duncan, and at checkout, enter Duncan, and you will get $100 off the Eero base unit and 2 beacons and a year of Eero Plus when you sign up. I've got it running right now, and I absolutely love it. Thanks, Eero.
Now, when I had the aggression for all those years, it was aggression brought up through frustration. Okay, from 2000, from 97, when I moved to L.A., another emotion popped its head up. And that emotion was called frustration. No matter what you do, when you're working at a job, you know, you could figure out your homework. You know, Duncan, I'm giving you a term paper on the psychoses of analysis of whatever.
Yeah.
You get together with your tutor and you figure it out. You make references to different books, you read whatever, and you figure out this term paper, you know. And then comes this thing called the career. Which, yes, a lot of people eventually have to bump into.
Yep.
Some people go to law school. They do the 7 years. They get whatever. They become a law clerk. And then they go on their own practice. And it's a journey for them. But they also know that they're getting $400. They're in an office where they're getting a few clients a month. And it's okay. The uncertainty of moving to Los Angeles gave me this certain frustration. It wasn't anger, because I was very happy to be here, but that frustration made me get aggressive.
Yeah.
That frustration of having 10 good sets in a row and nobody paying attention to you, you know.
Yeah.
Did they call you yet for the documentary at the Comedy Store?
No.
Where we're all doing some little piece. They're going to be contacting you because I saw your name on the list.
Ah, cool.
And it's been funny that I've been thinking about it a lot. What, you know, the frustration that I had at that time, believe it or not, my psychiatry was the Comedy Store. Because even though Montreal didn't want me, agents didn't want me, I wasn't getting invited to the big shows, you know, I couldn't go on Opie and Anthony. Mitzi sure accepted me.
That's right.
And in my world, I would go, you know what? Yeah, Opie and Anthony's a big deal. Yeah, Montreal's a big deal. But they're not as big as Mitzi Shore.
Right.
Like, in my world, is both, you and I both worked alongside her. And we both took a peek into the world of her soul, which was a scary fucking soul.
Well, she was a teacher, man.
She was also a teacher. And I told Rogan this yesterday. I go, 10 years from now, they're going to be talking about her experiences like acting teachers talk about Stanislavski.
That's right. 100%. 100%. And like, I was just talking to Tony Hinchcliffe about this. He's talking about how at night at the Comedy Store, late night, this like kind of playfulness, for lack of a better word, starts happening between comedians. A kind of weird improv, you know? People start fucking with each other in a way. It's a weird thing that starts happening. You can't even like, I can't even put my finger on it, what it is, but it's almost like an energy jumps around that place. And within that energy, we're all refining each other through interacting with each other in some way or another. I don't know what it is, but you're right. It's like, and when they study Mitzi, they could, I think, maybe you could sum up what she taught or one of like her philosophies when it comes to comedy, which is be yourself. Be yourself. That was it. Be yourself on stage. Find out how to be yourself on stage. And she would say mystical shit, man. Like, I can remember talking to her when I was like, I don't know, maybe doing the potluck and just fucking not knowing anything and being like, Mitzi, I want to find my voice. And she goes, what's the matter, honey? Did you lose it? And within that is like, on one level, it's just funny. It's like, but on another level, that is such a deep fucking thing to say, man. It's two things mixing. One, be yourself. Well, to be myself, I have to find myself. And to find myself, it implies I've lost myself, right? And how can I lose myself and simultaneously be a self? And yet, that's it, man. Everybody's looking for themselves. And they're looking for it in all the wrong places. But if and if the idea is that like humans are fundamentally good and you find yourself or become yourself and then you start transmitting that on stage and mixed into that self that you are, or what's like, and this is a woo-woo thing to say, in your karmic field is funny, you're funny, you're distorting reality in a funny way, then not only are you going to be funny telling jokes, but how many times have you seen like a, maybe like a comedy writer decides to do comedy for a little bit and gets on stage and has these really technically precise jokes that are good jokes. Like you can look at it and be like, those are good. That math is good for those jokes. And yet there's this like brittle dryness to the performance. And then like when I see you get on stage, like, you've got great jokes, man. But in the same way, when some of my meditation teachers are sitting there, they're already talking when they're not talking. And the way they're talking is because they're being themselves. Because they spend a lot of fucking time figuring out what that is.
Where'd you find yourself?
Oh, my God, man. That's a great question, Joey.
Was it on the stage?
Hell, no, it was not on stage. It was not on stage. You know, I've had that thing you're talking about, the twinkle where I like saw it, the thing that makes you want to get up in the morning and do the thing you're talking about, which for me lately is just I get up in the morning, I just sit still and I look at my breath. I watch my breath go into my nose. I watch my breath go out of my nose. And I do that for about half an hour. And then within that, I watch my mind. And then I see within my mind a trap. And the trap is the thing that in the past I would like address in the wrong ways. That's the main thing. So anyway, I don't think you just find yourself once. I think it's a practice. So it's like a practice. You don't just find it. You lose. You're sort of like hot air balloon. Maybe it lands for a second and you look around. You're like, holy shit, this is fucking paradise. This is paradise. I'm living in fucking paradise. This is amazing. And it might be the worst day. You might be in a fight with your wife. You might be getting a fucking cancer diagnosis. I'll give you an example, man. And thank God, and I'm sorry this is a cheesy thing to say. Well, no, it isn't. Thank God for teachers like you. Thank God for my meditation teachers. Just thank God. You know, people who like are not just full of knowledge, but have wisdom. Because like, this is where it pays off. I'm sitting next to my dying dad, right? And everybody, you see somebody get around a dying person and they immediately start lying to them, you know? And I saw that firsthand. And I understand why people do that, because everyone's afraid of death and they don't want to acknowledge their own death. And they certainly don't want to acknowledge they're about to lose a friend. So they get around the person, and my dad thought it was funny as shit. He would say to me on the phone, people are, you know, coming up to me, Duncan, they're saying I look good. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You know? Right? So I would get around him. And when he was, when people die, they lose their mind. They like their they personality shifts. They start sliding through time. He's back in Vietnam for a second. He's in the present with me for a second. He's just confused for a second. He's saying sentences that sound right, but the words are wrong. This is what happens when people are dying. Yet his soul is there. Doesn't matter. You can still feel his soul. It's fucking beautiful. But the times he was there, he'd say, "What's happening?" And I would say, "Well, you're dying, Dad. You're dying. You know that, right? You're dying." Because I didn't want to be like, "You're fine. You're going to be better tomorrow." I wanted to be in the truth with him, you know? And you would see the look of gratitude in his eyes, like knowing, oh, shit, okay, here's someone who's telling me the truth. So to me, sitting next to my dying father and being heartbroken, yet simultaneously knowing that the world is good and that even this is good, and that even this moment is good, and everything will continue to be good, that's, to me, a moment of kind of like finding myself. But I'm not all, like, it's a, I have to, if I don't like continually sort of train by working with teachers, or even just like the way you're like, you need to get out and be at the comedy store, be around comics. Really, what you're saying is you need to be around the teachers. You need to be around the community. You know, because like from that, we keep getting reminded of something. Fundamentally good. The world is fundamentally good. What we come from is fundamentally good. And it doesn't fucking matter if a meteor slams into the planet. It's still good. If the planet evaporates, still good. If the universe evaporates, still good. That, you know, that. That's what it's all about. And once you just touch that once, even if you're like, get confused again, I don't know. You're still going to be okay. You just have to touch that once. So I don't know, man, when I touched it.
It's funny how you could get confused at any age. I had a rough time this year. I had a rough time from about March till about... I had a rough time from about March till about mid-June this year.
Yeah.
Just, I got into my head. I was shooting a Netflix special. I had a lot of little things going on. I wasn't sure about the road. I wasn't sure about going out every night. I forgot that I have this 7:45 guilt. At about 7:30 every night, this anxiety runs through my body.
Yes.
Because since the time I was 15, at 7:30, it means something had to be done. Either you got to go pick up a bag of dope.
Oh,
you got to go here. You got to go there.
Huh.
So all those years of doing comedy and this and that, I would get this 8 o'clock anxiety, I call it.
Yeah.
In the old days, it was simple. All I had to do was go get a gram of blow.
Yeah.
And not even do it. Just have it in my pocket. As long as I had the gram of coke in my top pocket.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. The anxiety would go away?
Everything. Focus would come back. It was like eating an Adderall. Focus would come back.
Yeah, sure.
I was ready to go to the store and kill. I loved everybody. But this was weird. From the moment that anxiety started to the moment I had that cocaine in my hand, it was a total blackout. There was no stopping for red lights.
Oh, shit. Okay,
there
sure.
There was no... I didn't want to hear what you had to say.
Sure.
And so now I got off the coke. And the anxiety kind of went away, but it I call it the transfer of addictions.
Yeah.
It's called transferring of addictions. It's what I've been doing all my life, and yeah, it works for me. It works for me, Joe Diaz, because now it's... it's expired to the marijuana.
Yeah.
And out of all the evils, marijuana is the least out of all of them.
Sure. Hey, can I say something real quick?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Nothing's evil.
Right. No, no. But in my world...
I know what you mean.
I was in an evil place.
I'm sorry if that's...
You know, when you're doing heroin on Monday nights and you're not doing coke the rest of the week and you think that your heroin problem is the cure to cocaine.
Right.
And you're trying to get the phone number to 60 minutes because you want to talk to the producers. There is something wrong
it's
with
a
you.
It's a fucking problem. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That was the
yes,
problem.
Absolutely.
In September 2007, I had written a monologue out that I was about to call 60 Minutes and explain to them how I could save the world from cocaine abuse by giving them a little bit of heroin on Monday, 4 shots of heroin once a month, and there'd be no cocaine abuse. We'd win the war on drugs, and we'd sink Pablo Escobar. He wouldn't have nobody to sell it to.
Yeah.
And we've been importing heroin for so long, but just a little dosage. I was getting a $7 bag of heroin sent out to me, and I was splitting it in twos, and it lasted me the whole summer.
Yeah.
So after the 90 days of the summer, I came to that conclusion. Wow. I've only done coke once in 90 days.
Wow, right.
I'm on to something.
Yeah.
You know, so because of losing my mind in those certain areas.
Yes.
I have transferred addictions. You know, people just transfer addictions. They go from nail biting.
That's right.
To smoking reefer. To, you know, we all have a transfer. Right now, my trance. So after I stopped doing coke, I went to my original transfer of addiction, which was at 7:45, just so nobody's feelings get hurt. I roll a joint, and I go for a ride in the car. I get out at a park. I smoke it, stop at a 7-Eleven, get a Coke Zero, and go home.
Okay.
That's part of the addiction thing.
Got it.
So then something else happened in 1991. I got into comedy. 8 o'clock means you got to be on the stage, bitch.
Wow. Okay, sure.
I know you really want to watch Orange is the New Purple on Netflix with your girlfriend, but I really don't give a fuck what you want to watch.
Gotcha.
You have to be on stage.
Yes.
So for all these years, I had all these I have to's by 8 o'clock. So I think like in 2010, I was just battling this, and I would control it by going out.
Sure.
I had the store. I had this. I had that. Then one day I stopped going to the store. I had a substitute. Improv ain't the same.
Okay.
Ha-ha's not the same. Laugh Factory's definitely not the same. Nobody really scratched the itch that the Comedy Store had given me.
Right.
So I figured out a way just to go for a ride at night and do that. Now 2014 starts and I'm back at the store. But in the back of my mind, I was like, I got a call like when Mitzi was running it, Sunday through Sunday. That's the only way the store works.
Yeah, that's right.
Is if you call in for the whole week.
Yeah.
I couldn't cover the spread no more, Duncan. I'm too old. I got to be up at 8 with the baby.
That's right.
And I got to watch the kid, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. So now I went into this mental fucking disaster.
Right. Because your whole pattern's based on that. Okay, yeah.
So with that, the Netflix thing, just stupid shit. I watched the John Mulaney special, who's a great comic but a great writer. And I said to myself, why can't I be John Mulaney? Why can't I leave this R-rated fat fucking pig behind me?
Yeah.
So all those factors fucked me up.
Mulaney will fuck you up.
Mulaney fucked me
up. Don't watch Mulaney.
That little motherfucker who I love to death, he put this thing in my head before the Netflix special. And then when I got to the Netflix special, it wasn't John Mulaney. It was Joe Diaz who they wanted to see. But it was too late. In my head, I was pulling the John Mulaney.
Oh, God.
So as soon as I didn't do what I thought I was going to do, I laid on the floor like Conor McGregor did last Saturday.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like how Ronda Rousey got kicked in the head and she laid there. Yeah, she got kicked in the head and the head kick hurt.
Yeah.
But she wasn't laying there because of the punches or the abuse. She was laying there because you saw all the mistakes coming up to that event. I saw all the mistakes I did, not the triumphs. You see the mistakes and why you ended up on your back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be from a punch kick or a punch to the face. It could be you dealing with life that you end up on your back.
That's right.
And it's just because how you acted for a certain 4-month period. And then you pick up the pieces and you become a stronger individual.
That's it.
That, shooting that Netflix special, that plane ride home, was McGregor on his back laying there thinking, what the fuck just happened?
Right.
And when I got back, I knew it, what just happened. I had the answer. You know what the answer was?
What?
Mitzi. I went away from Mitzi's teachings. I went away from Mitzi's core beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, I went away from all that stuff. I thought I could pull it off. I thought I could pull off Joe Diaz without what she had taught me.
Yeah.
And I realized, so now very seldom do you see me do a set in town outside the Comedy Store.
Right.
My energy in the original room is the, I want you to think I'm going to kill you. That's what Mitzi wanted out of me. She wanted you to come out there. That's what she wanted from me. She goes, whenever you go up there and dilly-dally, you're wasting your time. I want you coming out of there like a Cuban mambo dancer. Mamboing your way onto the stage because that's the only thing that works for you. She was right. I was trying to go up there. Hi. How are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, yeah.
You know, she doesn't want that from me. All those things hit me on the plane ride. That's why I know in 10 years, whether you develop it, I develop it, Paulie develops it, Rogan develops it, one of us is going to put a book together and go, this is what she wanted out of a comic. This is the success rate that she had. These are the comics that are still around because there's tons of comics that are still around because of what they learned at that Comedy Store.
That's
her
right.
Teachings. Little things, not big things. She can't teach you how to be a comedian, but she's going to take a screw and adjust that screw to make you a better comic. It's like she fuel injected your carburetor.
Man, it is crazy, and it is true. And it's because she her philosophy was not the thing is not based on like here's what you do other than you get on stage and be yourself. And if you want to really frustrate a bunch of people, or if you want to come up with a fucking thing that honestly you can't really monetize in a book because it's two sentences. Get on stage and be yourself. It's like, I don't know what you are or who you are or anything about you. Only you know that. And you might not know who you are because you've been fucking hiding from yourself because you want to be John Mulaney. You want to be somebody that you saw, or you want to be somebody you used to be, or you want to be something that you're not right in this fucking second. And this thing that you are right in this fucking second, it might be filled with pain. And this thing that you are in the second, it might be addicted. Or this thing that you are in the second might be confused. Or whatever it is. But when you become, when you start training yourself to accept that, and you kind of let go of the endless battle against the people are fighting, this ridiculous endless battle. People are in this endless battle to become some version of John Mulaney. You know, for them, they might have a different John Mulaney, right? But they're in an endless war to try to become this other thing. And it's really sad. And it's a really tragic, tragic war they're fighting. And so this is why when you hear in, like, Buddhism, you'll hear the term surrender. And people hear that and they're like, fuck that, I'm not surrendering. That means I'm a coward. It's not that kind of surrender. It's a different kind of surrender. And it's really paradoxical because through this surrender, you win everything. You know, you're actually losing by winning this ridiculous war if the war you're fighting is to be someone you're not. Congratulations, you did it. You're now someone you're not. And now you're surrounded by people who want you to act like someone you're not.
Yep.
Good job. Because now you got to fucking keep up this ridiculous act around everyone. And this is where, man, you know, how many times have you gotten in trouble? You know, like, I don't know, maybe you didn't do this. Maybe in the earlier, in one of your other worlds, you did this. But you go out to eat with a girl and you want to become what you think she might want you to be. You know, so that's what a lot of people think seduction is. You know, and there's a whole fucking shitty, crazy, insane pickup artist books that are all based around analyze the person and become who you think they want you to be, trick them into liking you, and then they like you. God forbid that fucking works in a relationship. Cut to a year later, and someone's saying to you, you're someone I don't even know. And it's like, no, actually, this is who I am. I'm a crabby, sometimes depressed, angry, confused, stinky person who sometimes smokes too much fucking weed or gets too high or is lazy, and I'm inside, I'm just a big mass of fucking chaos. But because I've been putting on a show of being something, you know, now there's this rotten, rotten awful anxiety that people are feeling all the time because they're just, I'm not saying, but P.S., this is not like
an... No, Duncan Trussell, divorce rates aren't as high as they are because the only good, I've had one good relationship in my life, and it's the relationship I'm in today.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because I went in there with my heart on my arm.
Yeah.
I say a joke on stage. You ever take a girl out to a date, she goes, pick me up at my house, and you go over there, and she's got cats. And you're like, I love cats. And when she's dressing, you're kicking the cats. Get the fuck out of here. Every guy has kicked the cat. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
But we'll tolerate that cat to get that piece of pussy.
That's right.
And then one day we get stuck with the reality of who she is. Now she gains 20 pounds. She's not the piece of ass we are. We have to maintain the lie that we've been telling her. I have a friend that he's my brother. I grew up with him. He's my brother. And he's single today. Because every time he meets a girl, something has to change. I got in this car and then I go, well, you don't smoke no more? Oh, she doesn't let me smoke. You just lost.
Yeah.
You just look, but you still smoke. Yeah, I got to get out of the car and walk around the corner and take a shower and
sleep. Yeah, you're fucked.
You lost. You didn't. When I met my wife, I put all my cards on the line. I still remember the marijuana conversation. I still remember her going, I think that it's not going to work. And I said, listen, if the kid is good everywhere else, but smoking pot keeps him from, let the kid do what he does.
That's right.
And she went with it, and we're still together today. And she's never mentioned marijuana or the negative, nothing.
That's right.
Because she knows I'm solid in every other area.
That's right.
I just like to smoke my reef.
Yeah, man. And that's fine. And it's like, you're damn right. And it's like, you know, I heard this thing, and this sounds like it's off topic, but it isn't. And it's probably bullshit, but it's like the coolest fucking thing ever, but it's probably bullshit. But maybe not. So like... Right now, there's kind of like a ketamine like epidemic in certain parts. Like, people are really into ketamine right now. And I heard this crazy thing. And it's probably bullshit. But it's kind of cool, which is that the Yakuza, when they're like about to close some kind of like really big deal with like some rival or some business thing, that some of the leaders, this is probably bullshit, but some of the leaders will like do some kind of psychedelic in the closing of the deal with the person they're like doing the deal with, so they can merge with a person and see who they really are, so that from that they can see if there's some bullshit hiding inside of them, you know? And so like, to me, one of the things that I've known in various ways, not just with like intimate relationships, romantic relationships, but with friends, if I can't take LSD with you, something's off. Something's weird, man. Something's off. You know, it's like, I'm not saying you're bad, and I'm not saying I'm bad. But if we can't trip together, which, by the way, I don't do anymore, never touch the stuff.
Really?
Well, I mean, come on, man, it's illegal. But if I'm around you and you can't, and I'm not saying...
We're just talking about putting liquid acid on the communion wafers. Now you're telling me it's illegal. Who gives a fuck?
I guess you're right. You know, actually, I just had this guy, Emmanuel Safarios, on, and he explained to me that... you know, possession in California is decriminalized unless you're with intent to sell. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, the point is this. If I know that when I am tripping, I'm going to become who I really am, for better or for worse. Because everybody's a big jumble of things, you know, memory, strange stuff. And this is the other thing, man. If you haven't developed some compassionate ability, don't take a psychedelic with somebody. You know, that's the other thing about it, too. Which is like, if you're tripping with someone and then they do start showing you some side of themselves that you hadn't seen before, earlier versions of me might see that and be like, holy shit, right? But you have to figure out a way to love everybody, you know? And in a relationship, on stage, whatever it may be, you know? If you've been working on that, I think people can see it. I kind of got off on a tangent here, man. I guess what I'm meaning to say is this. You might be able to trick someone you want to impress into thinking you're someone you're not. And you might even be able to trick your kids into thinking you're someone you're not. And you might be able to trick your boss into thinking you're someone you're not. But try to trick a room of 120 people in the fucking original room that you're someone you're not. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. You might, maybe.
Once or twice.
Hypnotize
But not
them.
Every week.
Yeah.
Not every week. No, you'll get them.
No,
it's really, and you know, you can't trick yourself. It's weird you said something. And I've discussed this with cocaine, but I've never discussed it with acid. When my mother first died, I got over that first 18-month hump by doing acid and seeing the bigger picture. But I'll tell you something else. Whenever I did acid and I had to pee, I refused to look at myself in the mirror.
Yeah, that's right.
I would wash my hands and look at my hands and never look at myself in the mirror because I never wanted to see that person when I was tripping.
That's right.
It took me years to look at that person in the mirror, and it was when I got off coke. I never really looked seriously at that person in the mirror. Yeah, I would glance and spit on my hair to go a certain way, but that was the thing about me doing LSD. I miss doing all those things. And at my age now, I feel if I do them, I'm putting other people at harm. But I've had it up at the office, and there's nights I'll split a tab, and I'll go to the office, and I'll put on Dark Side of the Moon, and I'll bring a notebook with me, and I'll just write, and I'll think of an old memory or something. I never had a bad trip. And I've never had a bad trip because I never went into that state going into on a mental. I would always end crying. You watch Man on Fire?
No.
There's a movie, Man on Fire, with Denzel Washington, and he's an alcoholic. And it shows him at 3 in the morning how he would act. Having conversations, pulling a gun around the room.
Yeah.
Braggadocio, and then you just watch yourself fall asleep.
Right.
I was doing the same thing with the acid. I was preparing myself for the next week or the next day. I'm going to tell Duncan he could suck my dick. And I'm going to fucking stick it in his neck and tell him,
right,
don't talk to me about Buddhism no more. And
sorry.
And all of a sudden, as the trip would wear off, I would break down. My true emotions would come out. I'd cry. The pain would come out.
Okay.
The reason why I tripped. And while I was crying, I'd pass out.
That's what it's for, man, or if you ask me, that's a good use of it. And that here's the thing, man, because you weren't resisting who you were. Bad trips, 100%, or at least my bad trip, or what, challenging trips, as I've been taught to say by some of my friends who are in like the field of harm reduction, they say don't even use the word bad trip, because it's already like setting a thing in someone's head who's
right,
tripping out. It's a challenging trip. And it's like, in general, if a person is having this, they're doing the exact same thing they were doing when they weren't tripping, which is they're resisting something that they need to let go to, whatever it is. And the moment you let go, stop resisting whatever the fuck it is and start crying, it can be very healing, man. And this is not just, you don't have to be tripping for this. It's like everybody's clinging, man. They don't want to fucking let go. They don't want to cry. They don't want to let go. They don't want to be, because people are vulnerable. We're vulnerable. Humans are vulnerable. Underneath there is like a lot of like vulnerability and sweetness and like all the aggressive bullshit on top.
Since 1995, I've had this hate in my heart. I've had this true, true, true hatred. I mean,
still hate. There.
No. Hatred where I saw myself slicing this person's throat. You know, like when you're a comic, you see yourself going up on stage. You know, when you go to Weight Watchers, you see yourself at 185 pounds. You have to visualize it before you could see it. And in 1995, I swore, I put my hand up to the universe, and I said, they're not going to get away with this, and that's just the way it is. That's the person I am, and nobody could talk me out of it. And by 2000, the anger was worse. By 2003, the anger was worse, and but comedy was doing well. I was doing movies. I was getting a little successful in comedy. People were talking to me. I was opening for Rogan.
Yeah.
And it just built, and it fucking built, you know, and I'm going to kill this motherfucker. Because the plan was, if I didn't succeed in Colorado, on the way out of town, I was going to kill my uncle first.
Holy shit,
and then
man.
Get on a plane, go to Denver, finish these motherfuckers off. But this was going to be medieval style. This was going to be no bullets, no guns. This was going into the house, sitting them both down, slicing them up, making the one eat the other one's pussy.
What the fuck, making, Joey?
Shoving the dick in the other guy's mouth.
This I was mean, real. Like, you were actually, real. In this your was, mind, you were going to, it's not like some fantasy.
No, no, this was just,
wow.
This was just on the way out. This is the list on the way out. You know, and.
But what I mean is you meant to do this.
Oh, like, oh, 150%. I knew that it would come to this eventually. This is how this was going to end. This is going to end with me dialing 911 and saying that there's been a situation over here. Come over here. I would untie him.
You are in fucking pain.
Put the fucking both bodies on the floor. Put a gun in one of their hands. Shoot him twice. Shoot myself in the leg with that gun and go that I just blacked out. I came over here to have a conversation. And I blacked out.
Would have made a great episode of Forensic Files.
And they would have put me in an insane asylum. I would have gone to court and put peanut butter in my pants and stuck my finger in my ass and wept it in front of the judge. And it was really peanut butter and, you know,
something like, you know. I don't know if that gets you off the hook.
It tries. At least they'll give you a mental evaluation and you get Jello and you watch TV and you hang out with fucking Jack Nicholson in one floor of the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know. I kept having this. And I had to confront her. I had to call them for something. It was my ex-wife, her husband, and my daughter, who I haven't had contact with since she was 9.
Wow.
And she's now 29.
Still no contact from her.
No.
She's
and even
pissed.
And then we know I've called and talked to the mother and the whole thing.
Do you think she's... knows who you are?
Does she yeah, she knows.
She knows you're out there. She sees you on...
She knows the whole deal. They just told her whatever they told her and froze the girl up. And I bet the girl feels bad. And
but who you were back then,
it's completely
based on
different.
This, is...
It's completely
this,
different.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
So, but she knows that... She knows you
I've written her emails and...
Right.
I've done everything I can. I hired an investigator to justify my... Just to make sure I wasn't killing somebody that was innocent, I hired an investigator, and I even found out worse shit. And it fueled me up. And I called her about 3 years ago, my ex-wife, like a gentleman. And I said, hey, I'm really sorry about what happened between us, knowing I'm still going to stab her in the fucking throat. You know, I still called her because you have to keep your friends close and the enemies closer.
Wait, you said this was 3 years ago?
3 years ago, I called and I said, hey, I know that we got off to a wrong foot. This has just been terrible, but we're adults now. That was a long fucking time ago. And I hope you accept my apology. And she was like, yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm going to text her your number now and have her give you a call. That's been 3 years ago. I never got a call. I went online. I found her. I hired the investigator. He found where she lived in an email, and I've emailed her a couple times. I've hit her up on Twitter. No call. So for a couple months, I suffered. You know, I'm looking at this new little girl I have, and I'm comparing it to and her and I, our relationship started breaking up when we were 5. So as soon as Mercy turned 5, I became more aware.
Yeah, man.
I got really more aware because her and I relationship, and it was, and you know what? I woke up one night in the middle of the night, and I went to the kitchen, and I rolled a joint, and I made coffee. It was like 3 in the morning, and I thought to myself, I go, you know what? I'm going to call this lady and say this. I'm going to say, look up. I was sitting with my daughter the other day, the new one, the 5-year-old I have now, Mercy. We were sitting at a park or something one day, and I was watching her play, and I was watching my patients. And I go, you know, who the fuck was I kidding? 20 years ago, I didn't have this patience.
Right.
You know, I didn't have this. I didn't have these qualities that
right.
I have today. And something turned me around, and I said, would I leave Mercy with a guy like me in 1995.
There you go.
And I go, no, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. So from that started a train of inventive thoughts. And on this week's list, one of the things I was going to do was call Kathy. That's her name. Leave her a message. I always have to leave a message. Then she'll call me back. And I was just going to say, look, I just want to let you know that it's over between us. I'm not mad, and I'm never going to be mad at you. I just want you to know that I understood why you did the things you did. Hmm. And at the end, we both gained something. Yes, I lost a daughter, but I didn't have a life.
Right.
I didn't have a life at that time. I was just a nomad. I had no life. I had a semi-code. And I go, we both made out on this deal. You got to raise your daughter how you wanted without me being an animal in her life.
Right.
And I ended up with a life.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, we're even. I want to wish you all the luck in the world. I want to wish her all the luck in the world. My number is always available. My door is always open. But if I don't hear from any of yous ever again, we're cool.
Wow.
We're cool because we both gave each other what we wanted. You wanted to raise her in a normal fashion. Like the time I smacked her husband and the cops came and she was 4 and she was in the car crying. I looked at her and I go, does she really need this? No kid needs this.
That's right.
It's a great feeling to smack somebody in the mouth, but not in front of a 4-year-old daughter. This is going to stay with her forever.
That's right.
And today on the way home, I'm going to go home today. I'm going to make the call around 4. And that's how I'm going to end my week this week after your podcast.
That is so cool and powerful and great, man.
I had to do it just to let me live in peace. I could get hit by a fucking truck tomorrow. And whoever I face will go, come here. Yeah, you robbed this. Yeah, you lied. You did all these things. But you dying at peace, that's the biggest fucking gift somebody could have.
Man, this thing that you're going to do, it's just, what's beautiful about it is it's preceded by truth. You made contact with the truth there. And the truth is...
truth hurts.
Fuck yeah.
But it's the truth.
It's the truth.
It's the fucking truth. And we both got something out of it. We both got the most important things in our lives out of it. I got a life. I did not have a life until 1995. I was 32 years old. I did not have a life.
Yeah. You know, you were lost.
Lost. Completely lost. And going down a foxhole of even worse.
Oh, here's the thing, man. It's like to pull yourself out of the tailspin you were in. We call it grace. It is not generally going to, it's a miracle. There's no way for any of us to really pull ourselves out of the tailspin of like habitual patterns that are leading to like a down trajectory that's just hurting people is like a miracle. It's a miracle. But you can't fucking pull yourself out of a tailspin if you don't even know where the ground is. Like, you got to find the ground. You have to know what the fuck you're flying above. And you have to know what the plane is and who you are. Then all that shit leads to wisdom. But the wisdom sucks. Because there's one idea of redemption. That idea is you look back. It's like a movie-style redemption. You look back at the things you've done and the decisions you've made. And there's a kind of, like, sadness or a sense of, like, mild regret. That ain't fucking redemption. That's not redemption. It's when you look back and you realize, oh my fucking God. I hurt people. I said things when I was fucking pissed off that people might never forget for the rest of their lives. And when there's a kid involved, there's no way to sweeten that up. It's like there's no way to sweeten it up. It's to sweeten it up is to do, I think, an injustice to yourself and the person who suffered. It's like instead of trying to sweeten it up, what's happening is you're expanding your awareness of who you are. So you don't have this pocket of ignorance that's sitting in your fucking psyche where this whole thing that you were is just festering there, but you're pretending, oh no, it wasn't quite that bad. No, look at it as it is.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
There's freedom in that, even though it hurts.
Who wants to cut somebody's dick off and put it in their mouth? You got to be pretty fucking angry to want to do something like that. And for even for that thought to keep you up.
Yeah, to plan it, to think about it.
To plan it, yeah.
But here's where you're really lucky, man. As I've been taught, that fucking trajectory. So like in this world, there's people who think when you die, that's it, right? And then there's people who have this idea of like the Christian infinite hell thing, right? But the way I've been taught is no, the way it actually works is like the downward trajectory starts happening and you experience hell while you're alive. So all of a sudden, like, you know, the reason when you look in the mirror on acid, you're seeing your projections, right? So if you're a very paranoid person, if you're someone who's afraid of death, maybe, then you might start seeing yourself as a skeleton, or you might start seeing yourself aging, or you might start seeing like all kinds of weird shit that you're like not prepared to look at. It's no different than what we're doing in every fucking second, man. The bottom line is, man, every time you find this pocket of like bullshit inside of you, like a blister, it's like your psyche formed a blister around your past and it's nasty and it's just sitting there festering. And so you go around and you're mad, or the world sucks, or you're always paranoid, or the same shit starts repeating outside of yourself, because what you have inside of you is so fucking unbearable to admit that it's there and to look into it and really see it and accept that's who I fucking am. That's part of who I am. It's not who I am. It's a piece. Because you can't look at it in yourself. You start seeing it out here everywhere. Now all around you is the bullshit.
That's all you see.
That's all you see.
You don't see the beauty because you're blinded.
That's right, man. And then it gets even worse because your projection starts acting like your paranoia, because people get around you and you're projecting some weird bullshit onto them and they don't like it. So then they start confirming your ignorance. And then the next thing you know, downward trajectory. And it's like, shit, sudden shadows get longer. People actually are fucking you over. People are doing weird shit to you. People are cutting you off in traffic. It's not just like normal causality. There it does seem to be bad luck starts happening all the time. Real bad luck. In the same way good luck happens, you're like, there's no way that could have happened. That same kind of bad luck starts happening.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, man. Weird shit starts happening. Downward trajectory. Now you're in. Did you ever see Jacob's Ladder?
Yes.
Dude, remember when the subway train goes by and it's like there's weird things and they're going, ah, like looking out of the fucking. That shit starts happening, right? That movie is, by the way, all about this. So downward trajectory. And then you fucking die because you're living a paranoid life and you get shot, you overdose, you do something stupid, you die. And so a lot of people, to justify what they're doing, they think, yeah, then it's fucking over. But no, no, no. No. The trajectory keeps fucking happening, dude. And now you're in this realm called the Bardo. And that's now the same way you're projecting onto the physical world. The projection continues, but now you don't have a body. And the projections become what are known as like demons. And the demons start ripping you apart. They start eating you and tearing you to bits. And like it keeps confirming this bullshit ignorance in the most intense and severe and horrific ways. Until either you reincarnate and you get born into a fucking like family that is continuing this karmic pattern. Or it's somewhere along the trajectory. You did what you did in this life. Which is you realize who you are, or you start working on it, or you just start getting the intention that you want that to happen, and then shit starts brightening up.
I've been working on it for 30 fucking years.
I can tell.
For 30 years, and you finally get this this peace. That's it.
Look what you named your daughter.
Mercy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's peace.
Yeah, man. And it's such a, like, and then the other thing is when you do that, I don't mean to keep ranting here, man. I know it's 2:30. I'm going to keep ranting. Don't want to hold you here, Joey. No, I just find it very inspiring, because the other thing about it is, it's one thing to, like, meet a person, and I love seeing a person who's, like, had a great life and who's, like, is doing great. That's awesome. It's good. It's wonderful, in fact. We all suffer. Anyone who's like gotten to a point where they're not selfish, to me, that's pretty miraculous. But, you know, this is in the Bible, which in the New Testament, when they talk about the prodigal son goes away, blows all his fucking dough, fucks up his life, fucks around, fucks off, comes back to his father's farm just to work there, but purely like humbled by his, how he's been hurt by the world and his like selfishness. And the father gives him everything. It isn't like punishing now. You know, it's not that thing some people do when you've been a shithead and they never let you forget. Maybe they're like, okay, it's okay. But underneath it, there's this weird tax you're going to be paying for the rest of your life. In that story, the father is like, throws a celebration, gives his son everything. I think the other sons are like, what the fuck? We've been here working on the goddamn farm while he's out at whorehouses
getting blasted, all your money,
blowing all the money, and you're throwing up, giving him everything. And the line, I think, is something along the lines of like, that which was lost has been found. You know, you've been here the whole time. You've been found. You've been in my domain. You've been here with me. He was lost. And now he's back. And that's redemption, which is that once you look at the thing, pop that fucking blister, deal with the pain in a real way, done. Freedom. You did it, you know? And that's why there's always in the Bible this again and again and again and again and again and again, this thing of like, no, it's cool. Glad to see you again. And it's real.
Now I gotta go smoke 20 joints. I'm happy you had me on today.
Joey, thank you so much,
man. It was great to see you.
It's great to see you.
Congratulations on the birth of your child.
And, thank you, brother.
Right as soon as you have the child, I'll come down here and we'll talk about fatherhood every 6 months and see how much you've grown.
I can't wait. Thank you, Joey. I love you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna to you.
Much thanks to Joey Diaz for appearing on this episode of the DTFH. A huge thank you to our sponsors, Eero and Robinhood. All the links you need to get to them will be at dunkatrussell.com. And much thanks to you for continuing to listen to the DTFH. Don't forget to subscribe to us on whatever the server is that you're currently using. And if you want commercial-free episodes of this stuff or you just want extra DTFH, head over to patreon.com/DTFH. God bless you, sweet darlings. Until next time, Alorax Nivaradol.